As I said, my name is Brian, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the New Garden Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in New York City. Holla. And this is the Gratitude in Your Attitude meeting. I have to say, first off, it's an absolute honor and privilege to be asked to chair and do a little bit of service at this meeting. And the only thing I briefly want to say before I introduce the speakers, because as they told me from day one, leaders lead and speakers speak, so I will keep this to about 45 minutes. You laugh, I can do it. I just want to express my gratitude for this particular convention. My sobriety date is August 1st of 1993. Thank you. I got sober at the ripe old age of 19. My hair was brown when I finished drinking. I think AA did this to me, but the trade-off was fantastic, I have to tell you. I can't even begin to tell you how grateful I am to be here today and for Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, I went from a guy who just drank at some high school parties to drinking in $25 motel rooms, drinking $5 wine and Coors Light, and taking prescription pills that were no longer needed, if you know what I mean, and not really caring if I live or died. So that's what I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a social drinker. I'm not a social Percocet user. And one of the reasons that I'm here is that I think Reuniti is a very good wine. So the thing that I discovered is that when you start on Screwtop Wine, there aren't many places to go after that, because you're already on the last rung. So here we are. But I'm grateful to be here because 5 years ago I was at the Toronto convention on the verge of my, on the verge of my 12-year anniversary, and not knowing that I was also on the verge about a month later of the biggest spiritual crash that I've ever experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in the stadium that first evening and feeling like a lot of us feel in sobriety, and especially when we're drinking, like I was looking through that glass partition, staring at everyone else, and just there was something disconnected, and I couldn't put my finger on what it was. And you know, I had completely cut fellowship out of my life over the last several years, and you know, got a head full of program and used that to keep people away from me, and it came to a crash. And you know, got a sponsor and took me through the steps again and really saved my life. And I got to tell you, the man standing here 5 years later, I just can't believe how different it is 5 years later. You know, I'm grateful for that. I've never felt more connected to Alcoholics Anonymous than I do now, and I have good people like you to thank for that. So so for that, I'm very grateful, and I want to thank you for my sobriety. I would like to bring up a great pleasure to bring up our very first speaker here at the Gratitude in Your Attitude meeting. I'd like to give you Joy F. from Kentucky. Please help me welcome her.
Hi, everybody. My name's Joy, and I am an alcoholic. And I cannot tell you how blown away I am to be here right this minute, this very time and this place. This topic of gratitude is so perfect because I just can't imagine any better word. And lucky for you all, the thing I wrote out, I left at the hotel. So that's good for you all, probably, and maybe I'll actually say what I'm supposed to say. I hope so. My sobriety date is also 1993, January 2nd. And there's a couple of my home group members here that remember what I was like back then, and thank God for them. That's one of the first things that I became grateful for was my home group. And I also have a sponsor who I'm extremely grateful for, who believes in the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's been a good example to me, recovery, unity, and service. And I'm so glad that I didn't come here. So when I got here, I did not know what my problem was. But when I got here, I caught alcoholism from you all and found out that there's a solution to the problem that I have. And you showed me the path to take. I'm grateful that I've got my home group believes in the traditions and the 12 steps. And we read the books. We have Monday through Friday, 7:30 in the morning. I know there are some people that don't like getting up that early, but for some of us, it's just like getting up and brushing our teeth these days. So if you're ever in Lexington, come on by the barroom group. Sad to say we aren't in the bar anymore. We kind of enjoyed it when we met in the bar, but they tore it down, and now we meet somewhere else. But it's okay. We're all together, still practicing the principles. When I first started thinking about this topic, you know, I'm one of these thinker types, you know, the type. And so the first thing I did was to look up some words in the dictionary. And I started with the word attitude, actually. And, you know, you hear the word attitude a lot. And I think we know good attitude, bad attitude, you know. But one of the definitions had the word orientation in it in regard to a plane, okay? And that's the one that jumped out at me. I know how it feels to have a good attitude and to be grateful. That's what I call a good attitude, is when I'm grateful. And when I'm not taking the credit for it, when I know where the credit is due. I know what it's like to have a bad attitude, and you all can tell too. My husband can tell, you know, and resentful, full of the bondage of self, that really scowl on my face. And, you know, sometimes I actually like being there, I think, because it's a cop-out for me, see. If I can be there, then I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to act like a grown-up and take responsibility for myself. So once in a while, you know, I kind of get into that a little bit. But I got to tell you, most of the time, when it comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, I am just so grateful. I cannot believe, and the people that know me probably can't believe that I'm standing up here talking to you all today. I'm not the person that I was when I came in the door, and I'm so glad that I didn't come in, get fixed right away, go away, and just think, isn't that all great? Man, I would have missed so much. I would have missed so much, and I couldn't have even imagined what I would have been missing. The second word, well, the word orientation is what jumped out at me, because it reminds me that it's about my perspective on things and that I have a choice in that. When it comes to attitude, I have a choice whether or not I want to look at something one way or look at it another. Now, sometimes I'm not capable myself to see that I'm too close to it. So that's where you guys come in, because, you know, my sponsor and some of you that will tell me, hey, you know, if you're happy today, tell your face, that sort of thing. You all tell me. You mirror back to me. So sometimes I don't know what I'm seeing, if it's accurate or whatever. So you guys really helped me with that. So I feel like orientation was kind of a good word in regard to attitude. Also, I like to look at the AA literature. And one of my favorite books in the last few years has been The Language of the Heart. And that's the one thing I wish I did have here, to actually read you Bill's words, because I love reading Bill W.'s words in The Language of the Heart. And part of what he talked about with gratitude, it was related to acceptance and serenity and humility. And so, you know, that got me thinking. When I am in a grateful attitude, usually I am not feeling, I'm giving credit where it's due, like I said. I'm wanting to give back. I'm wanting to share with others. You guys have given me the privilege to come here and be a part of you. And, you know, I was taught very early that the way that I can show my gratitude is to be of service. And I try. You know, that's all I can do. I try. And I always like to bring in the third legacy of service, because for me, it's a huge part of my gratitude. And I'm talking back when it was just giving somebody a ride or sponsoring somebody, and both of us in the public library in tears because she's getting her first library card. I mean, it sounds so, you know. But this is the kind of thing. It's like, this is what happens at Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what we can have, you know. And being there when the baby was born, and being in a shopping mall. These are things that normal people probably take for granted, okay? I'm sure. But being in a shopping mall, and I'm one of these women who does not like to shop, okay? But being in a mall at Christmas, and there's this store with music boxes. And to be able to feel joy in a way that I had not experienced before. And my name is Joy. I was expected from a very early age. I was even told, you got the right name. And I spent a lot of time trying to make everybody happy and not feeling it. Okay? And so Alcoholics Anonymous has given me some joy. And I can remember the day that I was in a meeting and I was, you might say, gushing gratitude, which I can do sometimes. And I was told, we call that love. And I can remember that feeling and thinking, I don't know if I ever felt this before, the way I feel right now with you guys, because I was too self-centered, I think, to think about it, you know. And so I've had so many of those little moments in sobriety that have given me so much. And so many good people. My first fifth step, I remember going to have my first fifth step, and having a spiritual experience from it. One, I was doing it, and I think that's, you know, I was actually taking some action, and that's pretty cool, even being afraid. But I never felt worthy. I never felt worthy. And for this other woman to sit there for all that time, for hours and hours and hours, and just go through my life with me. I still am overwhelmed when I think about it. I mean, I'm so grateful for that first sponsor who was willing to do that. And now that I've been around a little while and been able to do that for other women, I know what gift I get from that, you know, and what she hopefully got from it that day herself. The way this program works, try to be an example. To people we sponsor and finding out, well, you know what? I'm just a human being, as I'm reminded so often, to join the human race. That's still kind of a biggie, because I tend to lean, you know, my character defects, you know, we get sober and we don't lose those. As a matter of fact, I think they get bigger and bigger sometimes at first, you know, it becomes a lifelong job of trying to get rid of the character defects. And so anyway, perfectionism was one that I struggled with and have to ask God repeatedly to remove, because I can still struggle with that sense of not being worthy. You know, I do not know why I have been given the blessings that I've been given here. I it's beyond my wildest dreams how I could end up with the blessings that I've gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous. This last April, you all gave me the honor of serving as a delegate at the General Service Conference for my area. And I'm telling you, you talk about humility. What are you all, crazy? But it just overwhelms me. It wasn't something I never asked for this stuff. I never asked for it. But I really, really appreciate today the people in my home group that said, you ought to be our GSR. Well, what's that? See, they knew better than I did. I didn't know. I didn't know what I was going to get out of all this. But I wanted what you had. And so if you told me to do something, I had enough willingness to try to the best of my ability to do it. And so I did what I was asked. And I, gosh, you know, here I am speaking at the 75th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. Blows me away. And there is just no way that I can express my gratitude enough to Alcoholics Anonymous in words. I do believe it's an action thing. I believe the way that I show it is by trying to pass it on, by being of service when I can. And, you know, before this, of course I'm nervous. Gosh, this is a big crowd. But I went back here in the prayer section back here. I don't know if y'all saw that. But, you know, I just asked my higher power to give me the words that whoever was supposed to hear what I had to say today, that I could say what they were supposed to hear. Because I don't know what that is, see? I don't know. I love you all in a way I could never, ever express with words. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous in a way I can't express with words. That's why I do the actions that I do. And I thank you for the opportunity to continue to give me jobs to do, because I'm the kind of person that needs to be busy. And I don't know what I do for Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'll tell you what, I know what it does for me. And I thank you, and I'm going to stop early. There's a change.
Joy brought up something that struck me in terms of gratitude, this idea that I never thought I would have deserved this kind of, you know, goodness in my life. You know, my sponsor said something to me a couple years ago that I actually had never heard anybody say in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was talking to him because my life was categorized by, you know, trying to make living in basically a crap existence, excuse the expression, and just trying to get as comfortable as possible in that position, because I thought that's what life was. And this idea of joy and so forth and the goodness in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very much like Joy in that I didn't think I deserved that. You know, when people came up to me when I was new and said, hey, welcome, coffee's in the kitchen and so forth, I thought the grace was for you, but it certainly wasn't for me. And I didn't realize, like, that was ego in reverse and that sort of thing. And, you know, my sponsor said to me a couple years ago, you know, you have a spiritual responsibility to be happy. And I said, okay, you know. Never heard that one before, but all right. And I try to remember that as I go forward, you know, because those years before that crash that I described, I spent the first, I'd say, 12 years in Alcoholics Anonymous doing exactly what the book said not to do. It said, you know, first of all, we had to quit playing God. And I had no idea that my attempts every single day to run my life was my playing God. And I was so obsessed with the things that I thought I wanted to achieve. And I thought I was supposed to get some kind of reward for, you know, answering phones at the central office and sponsoring people and making coffee. And I honestly thought that, you know, I'd leave these places, okay, so where's my career now, where's my, you know, and I didn't realize I was doing that, you know. And I look at my life today, you know, after the things I've been taught, especially in the last 5 years, and what comes, you know, every time I turn around, there's new blessing thrown in my life, and I just think, like, I did absolutely nothing to achieve that, you know, and I guess that's why they say grace is a gift, you know, and I just, it really blows my mind. Because in reality, you should have a different person chairing this meeting here, and that's the reality of it. You know, I shouldn't even be alive today, like many of us. You know, and here we are. So, anyway, enough out of me. I would like to bring up our next speaker. I have the great pleasure of introducing Vivian W. from Arizona. Please help me welcome her.
Can I move this down a little? Like about about that. Hi, everybody. My name is Vivian, and I am an alcoholic. I was so busy listening to Brian, I forgot I was the next speaker. You know, it's funny. I'm talking about being grateful. I'm grateful I made it here without having to be resuscitated by the paramedics. And you know, I was thinking, I came in, this is a huge, I said, if I knew I was going to be speaking at Yankee Stadium, I'd have worn my Yankees hat. You know, gratitude. I want you to know everybody sitting here has gratitude in their attitude. What we go through to come here, I'm just like, I was to the one in Toronto. I started with San Diego, Minnesota, Toronto, and now here I am in San Antonio. And you know what? I'm addicted. I'm addicted to the conventions because, you know, it's amazing. 60,000 plus of us are going to be here. I feel like we all have, like, it's like if I want to make a puzzle, put it together, I got only one piece. Ain't going to be much of a puzzle. 60,000 of us, we got a mighty big picture there. Almost the whole picture. We come together that way. Yeah, I think it's wonderful. And I am so grateful that I have a God that does for me what I cannot do for myself. I actually started in Texas 45 years ago, right? I kind of like I started here, went all the way down, and I'm coming back now. And here I am back in San Antonio. Not in San Antonio. I started in, if you know where Beaumont is, in Nederland, Texas. Thank you. From Brooklyn to Nederland, or bust. And my first husband was from there. I didn't meet him in Texas. I met him in New York. I was, you know, I was a drunk. Oh, you might figure that out already. I mentioned I was an alcoholic. And I drank all the time. I was drunk all the time. I just didn't know I was a drunk. You know, I thought I was, you know, drinking socially, you know. And I was working with some friends. They said, let's go up to the Catskill Mountains. This is in New York, a little further upstate. And I went up there, and this man came riding out of the woods on a horse, a yellow Palomino. And at first I fell in love with the horse. Then I fell in love with the man. Fortunately, I just married the man, not the horse. And, you know, we rode up to a dude ranch, and we kind of had like a date that night. You notice what I mean by a date. He told me later when we were married, he said he was trying to get me drunk. And I was trying to get me drunk. So it was a very successful evening. You know? I went back home to New York. He shows up Monday. I left Sunday in a hay wagon and asks me to marry him. Now, I never wanted to get married. I came from the kind of home where marriage to me was like my mother and father. It was like they were in the wrestling. Only one will, you know, leave alive. Into the cage they go. One will leave alive. And it's like, why would I want to be in a relationship like that, right? Now I'm getting married. So my parents are like, what? But they know me already. I'm crazy. So they say, okay. Then they ask the big question. What's your name going to be? Oh, you know, I forgot to ask him his name. I knew his first name. It was Don. He told me he was called Tex. And I said, yeah, and you're from Texas, right? And he was. Yeah, but I didn't know his second name. But I found out, you know. And, you know, we wandered around. You know, listen, one thing at a time, right? The first thing you make sure you have is your bottle. The name you could find out later, right? You know, it's not a problem. So, you know, for our courtship, we wandered up and down the Bowery of New York with two jugs of Chianti wine, you know, collapsing in and out of little places on, you know. And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, what a miracle it is. You know, I just want to let you know, my husband, this man from Texas, he was a wonderful man. And we went, you know, we were in New York, we went back to Texas. I got pregnant right away. I used to always think that if I opened up a book and there was a picture of a sperm cell, I had to go get the EPT test right away. I just got pregnant all the time, you know. And that's good, isn't it? You know, it means you're healthy. My last one, I was 46 years old. That's pretty damn healthy, isn't it? So, you know, we went back, and ended up going back to New York. I want to tell you, he was a wonderful man, but he was like me. We were drunks. He was in the Navy, a Navy SEAL. And by the time he was murdered in New York City, this was in 1973. This was like 7 years down the line. I started out, here I am in Texas, and, you know, I'm drinking. But I'm not the drunk I became. I'm not, you know. And then suddenly, like, he was, by the time he was murdered, my life had turned to, as Brian said, can I use the word shit, Brian? I guess I can. That's what happened. My life went down the toilet, literally. And, you know, I gratitude. We talk about gratitude and your attitude. Number one, I want you to understand something. I'm from Brooklyn. When I got sober, you understand, I had attitude in my gratitude, not gratitude in my attitude. This has been an ongoing process with the help of God and AA, you know? You know, if you were sitting in the car and I was getting in, I pushed you and said, move. I thought I was being polite because I said, move. What do you want? I say, excuse me today. See? Everybody gets better, right? And you know, it's so amazing. I can't believe how God works in my life. I ended up going to federal prison. You know, I was a drunk, and I was a heroin addict for 20 years. I did methamphetamine for 5 years. I was on methadone for 9 years. That's a lot of years. I'm going to tell you something. I'm here because God, I have God in my life, and I didn't do nothing. It seems like I always wanted to do the wrong thing. Somehow, you know, I believe God led me to AA, you know. God enabled me to find AA. And it wasn't real easy. My husband was already in prison, you know, and I got 2 years. And I wasn't real grateful at first. I was kind of real pissed at the judge, actually. But my lawyer actually told me to put my glasses on so I wouldn't look so menacing. She still gave me 2 years, you know, which I needed. My disease was arrested. I was arrested, and then my disease was arrested. I could not get off of the drugs. But when I got to prison, I managed to do that. Of course, when they asked me, they said, do you drink? And I said, only socially. I drank a half gallon to a gallon of booze. I lived on a boat in New York City, sitting on the bare, naked on my bare mattress of my boat. This is what I called social drinking, you know. Because, well, it was me and the bottle. You know, we were together. That's sociable, isn't it? I was so nuts. Then, you know, I didn't understand. Can you believe that I didn't think I was an alcoholic? You know, I knew I was a drug addict because, you know, it was more obvious. But I thought, you know, and then they asked me, you know, same thing. I'm in prison. They asked me what drugs I did. So I asked them what drugs they had because they had it. You know, it seemed like a waste of time to go through the drugs I did. If you just give me a paper, we'll check them off. Four columns of drugs, and I did every drug except the last one, and the last column was shoe polish. See, I didn't know you could do shoe polish. No one ever told me, and I never polished my shoes. So, you know, and now I'm going on. Now I'm in prison, right? And I actually was grateful. I was grateful to be there because I was in prison in West Virginia. It was beautiful. It was green. The same prison Martha Stewart, you know, oldest in West Virginia. I wasn't there when she was there, which I'm very saddened by because I could really have used a few domestic tips. You know, I used to say the only thing domestic I was ever good at was domestic violence, you know. Which, you know, that's not really good. And, you know, and while I'm in prison, right, me, the social drinker, you know, I get thrown in the hole for making hooch. You know how we social drinkers are. We like a nice glass of hooch every once in a while. It's the worst thing you can drink. It, you know, it smells like an eight-day-old garbage strike in New York City. And you know, like, I still didn't know I was an alcoholic. I did not know I was an alcoholic. Is that amazing? You know, they threw me in the hole. They gave me, I got 30 days. I didn't even get, they don't even, you know, I spent 6 days before I was even got to see the disciplinary hearing officer. Because in prison, you are not innocent till proven guilty. You are guilty till proven innocent. And here I am in the hole, and I work with this, we make the hooch, we put it up in the ceiling, you know, a good vintage is 4 days. And sometimes you have like ants fall in it. So what? I used to drink my vodka martinis with a twist. Now I drink my hooch with an ant. Couple of ants, right? Can't hurt, a little protein. You know, when you drink it so much, you need a little protein, you know, keep yourself going. I get thrown in the hole. I get 30 days. I'm in plumbing. I'm a plumber in prison. And my boss comes. I I got the serve. He got me out. I had the 6 days originally at 30. He got me out a little early because he said he needed me. As soon as I get out, they say to me, go get your stuff. You know, they bust you down, no more room, you know, whatever. You have to go back to the dorms. And as soon as I go out, what happened was when we made the hooch, the woman I was working with, he put it in two big Cremora jugs. I put it in we drank one, and I put the other one in the sleeve of my army jacket, which was rubber banded and hanging on the door of my room. So the minute I went back to my room, I had to get my stuff, and what do you suppose was hanging on the door? My jacket with the hooch. And what do you think I did? Because I'm not an alcoholic. I drank it immediately. I didn't wait till the evening when it might have been smarter to do it because you know what? If you wait, they might find it and confiscate it. So you don't. You drink it right away. I'm a drunk. You know, I've been a drunk all my life. It is a miracle that I'm here. I can't believe. My husband got out of prison. He got two more years than I did because he was, I don't know, more culpable, I guess. I don't know. Is that what they called it? And you know what? Honestly, I was home, and the first thing I did when I got out, they took me right to a plane because they don't like you hanging around when you get out of prison because it's all this in West Virginia. You know, they have like two bars, a florist shop, and, you know, they don't want the whole town full of drunks that forgot to go home because they got drunk. So they took me on a plane. The minute I got on the plane, the first thing that happened, a man said to me, would you like a drink? Oh, my God. You know, of course I'd like a drink, you know. I drank. By the time I got to New York, I was getting off the plane. My mom and my daughter are waiting for me. You know what? I'm wearing my headband. My daughter says, there's mom. My mother says, no, that's a man. My daughter says, no, that's mom. You know, my daughter said, I look like the poster child for Attica. You know? And you know the way I got, the nice thing about when I got, my husband shared this story this morning. We were out together. We were sentenced, but we didn't turn ourselves in because we're alcoholics. And we were on a federal fugitive warrant, and they had to catch us. And I had gotten my mother and my daughter, right before I was sent to prison, I got my mother and my daughter arrested. I got them arrested Mother's Day, 1986. I thought I would give one nice gift to both of them, you know, and I got arrested too. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to talk about gratitude, this is the thing I'm most grateful for, that my mother was put on probation and I didn't have to serve my time with her. Because I don't know, I wouldn't be up here speaking to you because I'd still be locked up. I could see myself walking down the compound and my mother saying, put your sweater on, it's cold, you know. Ma, please, you know. So, you see, you always have stuff to be grateful for. Am I right? My life has been amazing. I get out, you know, everything I found AA. He used to call home every weekend. I was drunk every weekend. Every weekend I was drunk because I thought I was a functional alcoholic now. I got home from work Friday. I picked up a gallon of vodka and I said, this is all I'm drinking this weekend. Just a gallon. You know, moderate. I'm moderating my drinking. So by Saturday night, I come to Sunday morning, no more booze. I'm living in East Orange, New Jersey. And there's a liquor store that says, we deliver. Every Sunday, I call them for a delivery. Every Sunday, they say, we don't deliver. So I'm just hoping. You can hope, right? Everybody has something they hope for. Going down, schlep on down in my flip-flops and an old shirt to get the booze, come back to the house. This is how I'm living. My husband calls home and says to me, you know, he found sobriety in prison, you know. And he says to me, you have to go to AA. I can't live with you if you're not sober. And I'm telling him, good, I'm drunk. Fine, you're not living with me now. What's the difference? Right? I'm here by myself? Okay. So, no, and then he's telling me, you know, you've got to go to AA. And I told him where he had to go, and he didn't go there. And I didn't go to AA. But, you know, as time went on, I got to the point where I knew I had a problem. I just didn't want him telling me I had a problem. You know, see what I mean with the gratitude? I'm very grateful here, but I've got a little attitude going with it. So you don't tell me where, you know. Finally, one day, my sobriety date is October 1st, 1988. And you know what? On September 30th, 1988, I was an active drunk. On October 1st, 1988, I was an alcoholic in recovery. my entire life changed, just like that. And I didn't know how it could. When he would say, you have to go to AA, he'd say, you just don't drink, you go to meetings. I'd say, if I don't drink, why do I have to go to meetings? You know, if I just don't eat, do I have to go on a diet? No. So this isn't it. Please don't talk craziness to me, you know. Now, I go to my meeting, and you know what? That's why I tell people, I bring meetings. I never thought I'd go back willingly into a prison. I do. I go and I tell people, you don't have to believe that AA works. It works. Believe it because I believe it. You know, and my husband and I, we come out, I find AA, I start going to meetings. And I'll tell you what, I get involved in service. When I came from, they still smoked. I'd been washing coffee cups, you know, cleaning ashtrays, etc. When he gets out of prison, we move to a place in Brooklyn, right? And we're living in this little house. And I was coming up on my first AA anniversary. And believe it or not, I was nervous because in Brooklyn, what they do is they give you the home meeting and you introduce two speakers who speak for you. And I was so nervous that I'm going to, oh, I don't want to, you know, I want a big deal, right? And I was so nervous. I don't know. I'm always afraid I'm not going to look good. Not going to look good. I'm up here not looking good. This is what it's about. What am I telling you? How wonderful I was. You know what I tell people? You know what I am? I'm a really good, bad example. This is my life. I spent the whole first part of my life doing anything, the worst you can imagine, and now I spend the whole rest of my life telling everybody about it. If I was up here telling you how good I was, you'd all fall asleep, you know. But, you know, you don't want to look bad, so I'm praying. I pray to God, please, God, don't want to get my period for my first day anniversary. You must be careful what you pray for. I'm 46 years old. A week later, I found out I was pregnant. She's 20 years old now. And you want to know what's really amazing? We were living in a house owned by a rabbi. I'm Jewish, and so not that it makes a difference. You can live in a house owned by anybody, but, you know, you don't have to be Jewish to, you know, you don't have to live with a rabbi, you know what I mean? But it just happened. We rented his basement apartment, and my husband and I, my daughter was conceived in the basement of a rabbi's house with a synagogue upstairs. She's in Israel. She's becoming an Orthodox Jew. So somehow God knows everything. I know nothing. I just wander along and do the next best thing. Now I accept it. I truly accept it. This is the most wonderful gift. I mean, like, I was thinking last night, I woke up 4 o'clock in the morning. You know that you say visions of sugar plums danced in your head. No, visions of Bill and Barb were dancing in my head. I was thinking to myself, what a wonderful fellowship this is. What a great program. I was reading about when Bill, he had his white light experience, and he went to Dr. Silkworth, and he said, am I insane? And he said, no, you know, people have had these experiences. And I thought, Bill had this famous white light experience. It was intense. It was so much. It was intense because Bill was being given the inspiration to start this fellowship, to get it from Bill to Bob. I always think the United States, what the motto of America is, right? E pluribus unum, right? Right? Out of many, one. Our motto is from one, many. From one, from Bill to Bob. And then so on and so on and so. And here we are. What, there'll be like 70,000 plus here? Is that amazing? We all struggle. We come any way we can to get here. It's like we each have a little bit of the light. Bill got the main light. He passes it on to us. We each have a little light inside of us, a little light that never goes out. You know, it may flicker, but it doesn't go out. And it can always be fanned. And what are we doing now? Why, my God, we are fanning it. We have a bonfire here. We are on fire. How much time do I have? Oh, perfect. I have 2 minutes. Isn't that great? Because usually with me, I could, you know, talk forever, but that's okay. This is so wonderful. I just want to say I am so happy to be here, and I can't wait for the flag ceremony tonight. It's the most moving experience. I mean, like, we are, I mean, and you know, everybody's saying, this is a big crowd, but look how well behaved they are. Nobody's standing up and saying, no, you know, the first time I spoke in New York, I spoke at Bellevue. There was a guy in the back standing up and screaming, let the lady speak. Let the lady speak. I kept looking for the lady. I didn't know who he was talking about. Anyway, thank you. Have a wonderful convention.
Thank you, Vivian. Would have been nice to have a little more energy, but cool. It was good. It was good. Can't have everything, right? I would like to take this privilege to introduce our third speaker for our meeting, and that would be Ken Kay from Arkansas. Please help me welcome Ken Kay, please.
Alaska, right?
From Alaska, excuse me, from Alaska.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. My name's Ken Kay. I'm from the island of Kodiak in Alaska. It's otherwise, I don't think I'd have this many clothes on and this much heat. It's a lot warmer than it is back home, I'll tell you that. We get about as much rain, but it's cold rain, so it keeps you on your toes there pretty much. I'm an alcoholic, and I ran to Kodiak, Alaska, you know, from Colorado. My sobriety date is November the 15th, 1985. I was looking on one of those sobriety programs, and you know that an app that I have on my iPhone, and it says that today I have 8,995 days, one day at a time, you know, and that makes me pretty grateful. I think everybody that has talked so far has said the same thing. It's pretty easy to talk about gratitude when we're here together like this. I've been fortunate enough to have been to San Diego and Minneapolis and Toronto and now here. And gratitude is something that I know something about today. When I started out in 1985, there were a lot of emotions that I didn't know too much about. Gratitude, love, humility, honesty, nothing. I knew a lot about attitude, though, you know, because like most of us, you know, to stay good and drunk for about 25 years takes a lot of attitude. You know, and you're not real grateful for all the things that are going on in your life at that point. You're just looking for the next drink. Like Joy, you know, I was really honored to serve the state of Alaska as their delegate in 1998 as Panel 48. And I've been fortunate enough to see the program all the way from the basement of the homeless shelter in Kodiak, Alaska, to the General Service Conference in New York, and to see everything in between, and to see the gratitude and the honesty and the hope that goes on all the way between those two places. And all the places in between. Something that Vivian talked about is something that happened to me. You know, on November the 14th, I have to admit, November the 14th, 1985 was a pretty crappy day. You know, because it scared me sober for the next almost 25 years. You know, I don't have the desire to drink today, but I do have an honest desire to help other people and to maintain the sobriety that I have. But like we talk about in the meetings that I go to anyway, you know, I have to give something back if I want to keep what I have. Today I have that spiritual reprieve based on my spiritual, or on my my daily reprieve based on my spiritual condition. Bill says in the article that he wrote on service that service is gratitude in action. And that's what I try and do today. Gratitude to me means love of the program that saved my life. You know, they talk about, or we talk about, being in a spiritual kindergarten. I had to do kindergarten two or three times to get to the right point to where I could get to spiritual first grade. And I was reading a book of reflections by Thomas Merton not too long ago, and I found a quote in there that said, and you know, like I just mentioned, gratitude means love to me, to the program. There's a quote in this book by Thomas Merton that Dostoevsky wrote, where love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. Love in dreams is greedy for immediate action, rapidly performed, and in sight of all. You know, that's how I used to live. I used to hope that all the things that I was doing would be performed rapidly and in sight of all. Not much humility there. You know, lots of driving, four on the floor and a fifth on the seat. You know, daily drinking. Service work is not immediate action. Service work is grinding it out and doing things for other people that I normally wouldn't do. Bill said, I try hard to hold fast to the truth that a full and thankful heart cannot entertain great conceits. When brimming with gratitude, one's heartbeat must surely result in outgoing love, the finest emotion that we can ever know. You know, I'm a different person today than I was when I was drinking almost those 25 years ago. You know, that's a little longer geographic than most people make. You know, to get to an island about 250 miles off the coast of Alaska. But it's there that I found some peace, and I found myself. You know, we're pretty much people who wouldn't normally mix. The guy who took me under his wing was an enforcer from La Raza in L.A., who also ran to Alaska. And then just recently got out of 7.5 years sober in Folsom. So on the fishing boats in Alaska, you know, you meet all kinds. you know, that's that deadliest catch that they talk about. You know, the deadly thing is the things those guys catch. You know, there's lots of drinking and lots of drugging going on those boats. I remember a couple of crewmen, friend of mine, that talk about, you know, it used to drive them crazy when they were crab fishing because they could smell the marijuana coming from the wheelhouse, and the beer can would go by the deck about every 20 minutes. You know, and these guys are up maybe 48 hours at a crack, you know, and if it's not you doing the drugs, you don't want somebody else using them up, nor driving while you're supposed to be working on the back deck, you know. So there's some pretty cool things I've heard about meetings at sea where a guy will go on the VHF radio and ask if there's any friends of Bill out there. And the guys will have meetings boat to boat out in the Bering Sea. You know, the program is everywhere. Hell, there's more chairs in this room than there are people in, you know, in the town that I come from Kodiak. We have fairly small meetings, you know. Mostly, there's maybe 15 or 20 people in my meeting, and the meeting that I go to every Friday night. But we got more chairs than that. If any of you want to come to Kodiak, we'll welcome you. We're at one of the Native Association treatment centers where they teach those guys how to be sober if they need to, or at least give them a place to go to when it's time. Gratitude is very easy for me to talk about, because I don't have to live the way that I used to live. I'm not the person I used to be. You know, I'm kind of right-sized now. I'm in my own skin. I'm not trying to be bigger than I should be, nor am I trying to hide from anything and be smaller than I used to be. Being right-sized is kind of nice, and living in my own mind is kind of nice, too. I deal with all the ego things every day that we all talk about. You know, I got taught pretty early on that ego deflation and spirituality would be the key for me to be sober. So I like to read a lot about that. In those days when there's not much going on and the wind's blowing outside and you know, I can be at peace with myself. That's a funny feeling, you know. That's an odd emotion and an odd feeling for an alcoholic to be at peace. This friend of mine, my sponsor, Chato, used to, he would tell me, just go home and sit down in your couch, you know, for 20 minutes and don't turn on the TV, you know, and see if you can do it. You know, and it took a while. You know, now I'm up to about a half hour, I think, you know, where you can do something without pacing around or needing some sort of electronic interference to, you know, to take my my head somewhere else. I think we all earn our busy head, you know, in all those days of drinking that we had. I like what I read in The Best of Bill that says that, therefore, guilt is really the reverse side of the coin of pride. Guilt aims at self-destruction, and pride aims at the destruction of others. You know, I spent a lot of time trying to make sure that everybody else looked bad, so I looked at least reasonably good. You know, it's funny what the alcohol and the drugs does to our head. You know, it made me believe I was good looking and that I wasn't this shy little kid, you know. Like Brian talked about, you know, when I, his hair was brown, I had hair when I got to AA. You know, being sober made my hair fall out. And thank God it cleared my head. Bill goes on to say, you know, that guilt aims at self-destruction and pride aims at the destruction of others. This is why I see humility for today as that safe and secure stance midway between these violent emotional extremes. It is a quiet place where I can keep enough perspective and enough balance to take my next small step up the clearly marked road that points towards eternal values. You know, I have to live the spiritual life today, or I'm going to get drunk. I know myself too well. You know, it's like I talked about, it's a little cold in Alaska, and we live on this island. And so we, whenever I come to one of these things, I try and do some kind of a road trip, because there's only like 45 miles of road on the island. And so we flew to Dallas and then drove down. And even after almost 25 years of sobriety, you know, when I walked into a 7-Eleven or when we were at a gas station, you know, and they had that 8x8 cooler with all those iced 16-ounce beers, you know, one after another sitting in there, the old feeling was still there, you know, that, man, I'd like one of those cold beers looks awful good. You know, but I knew where I was going. I have a purpose today, and I have a reason to stay sober. You know, I have to pass on to other people what was freely given to me. You know, I'm a good candidate to watch out what you pray for. You know, you might get it. You know, you can be elected delegate in Alaska with 35 votes. So, you know, you can get a 2/3 majority at an election assembly with 35 votes. So, but those experiences to meet other people at functions like this, and at the General Service Conference, and at what we hold on the West Coast, the Pacific Region AA Service Assembly, PRASA, you meet other people who are giving back, who are involved in service work. You know, and I think we were speaking with some people while I was trying to kill the cotton mouth before I came up here. You know, we were having some lunch and talking about the fact that when you come to these kinds of things, you meet people who are doing the same thing that you're doing and staying sober in the same way that you like to stay sober. And I didn't know that until a guy that was our DCM gave me the chance to go to an area assembly in Alaska. And, you know, I thought I was getting ready to pat myself on the back, and because I was the GSR of one of the bigger meetings in Kodiak. And he was a rescue helicopter pilot for the Coast Guard. And he said, I got duty that weekend. So he said, you're going to have to go. And I said, well, I really appreciate it that you picked me. And he said, I didn't pick you. The other four people I asked couldn't go. you know, you're the last stop on the block. and if you can't go, then, you know, we're not going to be represented. And so I got to go all the way to Juneau, you know, which is... Travel in Alaska is kind of a challenge from a service standpoint. You know, I have two ways to get to Anchorage. I can fly for about an hour, and then it's 350, 375 miles to Fairbanks. Or I can take a ferry for 9.5 hours and then drive 350 miles to Anchorage, you know, and see all the other people in between that are in the program. And the cool thing is that even in the, you know, the light population area that we live in, the program's still there, and it's still awake, and there's still an awful lot of people in recovery that that I can talk to when I need a meeting, and they can talk to me when they need a meeting. It's not uncommon to pick a guy up off a fishing boat and take him to a meeting. You know, and I get that secret smile when I get to do that. You know, when you can help another alcoholic to help to achieve sobriety. Most of the time, little do they know how much it's helping me to go back into, I haven't done it for a while, I have to admit, but my sponsor used to make me go back to jail with him to talk to other alcoholics. And you know, I think there's about give or take 600,000 people in Alaska, and 80% of them live within 100 miles of the city of Anchorage. And so that leaves miles and miles of miles and miles for the rest of us. You know, and they say the cool thing about Anchorage is that it's so close to the rest of Alaska. You know, it's a good place to jump off from. But I still hold fast to the idea that I am eternally grateful for the program of AA and for being able to give back. You know, to have a way to give back is something new to me. And to really actually want to give back is something new to me, too. You know, instead of, I want all the shiny stuff, and I want it for me, and I want it right now. You know, I need to just take it easy in sobriety a little bit. You know, the God of my understanding allows me to take it a little easy. You know, and to just... all the lines come back that I read on all the meeting rooms, you know. I think I could probably just give a talk on all the things I've seen in meeting rooms. You know, I can live today in thankful contemplation of He who presides over us all. I have a chance to stop and think today. You know, we don't always have the chance to just stop and slow down a little bit and celebrate who and what we are. When we all get together like this, we have the opportunity to be truly grateful for what we have. I remember I was amazed when I went to the International in San Diego, and they had the headline on the paper that crime was down 30% that weekend. You know, and being the kind of guy I am, I wondered, you know, well, you know, what kind of alcoholics are doing the other 70%, you know? Or, you know, most of us are off the streets for a little while, you know, in meetings like this and in fellowship and doing other things. And, you know, I gave the police in San Diego a little bit of a breather, too, I guess, so... We really belong not inside these beautiful halls, you know. We belong in the chasing the dumpsters out back. You know, I think we're privileged to be sober and to be on the inside. There's an awful lot of us that are still outside, you know. And I like what my... what my sponsor would tell me, you know, that I have to live in AA and not outside AA. I have to participate in my own sobriety, and I have to always be grateful for what was given to me freely. That's my attitude of gratitude. You know, I've learned by being grateful for things, I've learned to live with myself, you know, and be able to make amends. I did some dictionary work myself, you know, when I first sobered up, and I found that making amends didn't mean that I had to just be sorry for what I did. I had to amend or to change my behavior. And that's a good way for me to give things back, is to be a different person than I was when I was drinking. I'm a giver today and not a taker. You know, and for that I'll always be grateful. You know, and I'm happy that all of this is here, and I really appreciate the hurricane too. You know, it kept things a little cooler for me, and I've seen glimpses of this warmer weather down here, and air that you can bite. You know, It's usually moving too fast for us up there to bite. You know, we get 50, 60 knot winds often. So I'm really thankful for the opportunity to be here, and I hope all of you have that same gratitude feeling that I do. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. I was I got a lot of what Ken said. I was pretty envious. He said he moved out to an island and found peace. And I live on an island right now in Manhattan, and I have yet to find any peace there. But I found a lot of things there, but peace is not on that list. I want to ask everyone to please give a warm thank you to Joy, to Vivian, and to Ken once again for sharing their experience. I want to thank everyone for not only attending the conference, but attending this particular meeting. I don't know about you, but I could always use a little reminder of gratitude. And I got something that Ken said. I'd just like to leave you with this, that, you know, I was always somebody that had way more attitude than I had gratitude, and that's a fact. I remember throughout school, who would always say, you know, he's a good student, but he has a serious attitude problem. And that carried way too far into adulthood. But something he had said, it reminded me that, you know, as grateful as I am at times, and that this is an action, and there have been periods of time where I've been so blessed with being busy because of good things that have come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then my phone rings and it's a sponsee, and I'll think to myself, doesn't he know that I'm in the middle of such and such, and I can, you know, I'll get irritated, and I'm reminded that that's the wrong attitude. I spoke to my sponsor about that one time. I was so busy, and I was waiting for him to say, well, that happens, I understand. And he said, you better knock that off. So I needed that. So I hopefully will knock that off and continue to knock that off going forward. Thank you again for attending. Thank you for giving me the pleasure of chairing this meeting. And we'd like to close this meeting, as we do in New York City, with the Serenity Prayer, if everyone would like to join us.